Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com coming to you on Tuesday, the 27th of March, 2012. And although it is Tuesday and not our regular Monday, I am coming to you with Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster. And let me once again, to listeners who haven't heard it yet, I issued a mea culpa on Corbett Report Radio stating that Bob was kind enough to join us at our usual time yesterday, but I was, well, shall we say, asleep at the switch. And unfortunately, that conversation did not get recorded. So I am most assuredly recording this one. So, Bob, thank you so much for your time once again.
No problem at all.
Well, it's great to have you here as always, and of course, always tons of information to go through. And I thought maybe we could start by taking a look at an article that just came out on blacklistednews.com called 10 Reasons Why the Reign of the Dollar as the World Reserve Currency is About to Come to an End. And these 10 reasons include the fact that China and Japan are dumping the US dollar in bilateral trade, the BRICS are planning to start using their own currencies when trading with each other, the Russia-China currency agreement, the growing use of Chinese currency in Africa, the situation in Iran, the UN pushing for a new world reserve currency, and it finally ends up the list with most of the rest of the world hates the United States. Not to put too fine a point on it, I suppose. So lots of different reasons that a lot of different analysts are coming to the conclusion that the dollar will not be the world reserve currency for much longer. But let's start out on that note. I know that you've been writing and thinking about Operation Twist and its failure recently. So let's talk a little bit about this Federal Reserve program.
Well, first of all, I think foreigners are disgusted with the United States government, as well as those who control the government from behind the scenes. I say that because I want to differentiate, I would say on average, 75 to 83% of foreigners really like Americans. And they still think they're great people and generous and so on. And so let's put the blame where it lies.
And let me, as a Canadian living here in Japan, back you up on that. All of the Americans I know over here are friends, and I love them dearly. It's definitely not American people that I think are abominable. It's the people controlling their government.
Yes, that's true. As far as the Operation Twist is concerned, they say it's over. We don't know how much they spent. Probably never know. They say that they don't need another one, but you have to believe that their supposed recovery is going to go forward. I don't think so. Mr. Bernanke might have been a good professor, but he comes across as being confused. He doesn't understand what goes on in business, government, and industry. He lives in a different world. And when asked questions, he gives the stupidest answers I've ever heard. And that's pretty demeaning. But he's a figurehead. He doesn't make those decisions. They're all made behind the scenes, just like they are for the president and just like that for Congress. Because probably 95% of the people in Congress are paid off. Doesn't matter what party they're in. But getting back to the effectiveness, we've just seen a move from, since September, a move from, I guess we saw an intraday low on the yield of the U.S. 10-year note from about 166, I think it was strongly closed at 188, and now it's, I get up to 240 the other day. I think it closed at 225 or so yesterday. And the idea of Twist was to make the yield on the 10s and the 30s go down, and also to make the yields on the short-term paper go up. So they sold the short-term paper and they bought the long-term paper. Well, waiting in the bushes were all their friends out there who knew what they were going to do because they told them, and they blew off their 10-year and 30-year and 7-year paper. And that sort of cut off the Fed at the pass. And so when I see the IMF and the UN come out and say, this is a wonderful program, it worked like magic, they must be living on another planet, which I think some of them are. And so with that said, I believe that it was a failure. And such a failure has not come at a very good time. The question is, will they need QE3? Of course they will. They're just playing games. The Federal Reserve has become very highly politicized, something it wasn't transparently so years ago. I mean, the Fed spoke and everybody else listened. They don't do that anymore because they know they're playing the political cards. And so this is the sort of thing that has made the attempt to liquefy parts of the economy unsuccessful. And so what's the new approach? It has to be QE3. And so I think that's where we're headed eventually.
Well, absolutely. That seems to be where things are going. And it's interesting, as you say, just a couple of weeks ago, the Bank for International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, was coming out saying that Operation Twist had been a stunning success and saying that it may have a significant impact on the 10-year Treasury bond yield comparable to that of outright asset purchases. So basically saying that this did the job of another QE. And you've got quotes in that same article on Bloomberg from people like Dan Orlando of Deutsche Bank and others saying what a remarkable success it had been. But of course, perhaps they spoke a couple of weeks too soon to really pronounce on it. But certainly, it does seem just to point to more of the cronyism that really belies so many of these plans, that if they announce it beforehand, of course people are going to position themselves in order to get the most favorable rates that they can. So it's not really a surprise once they announce this type of move beforehand that people are going to position themselves to get ready for the coming movement.
Well, they're all working in concert, and they're all struggling for their lives. Because one of these big banks go under, they're all going. And there's a good chance of that. If there wasn't, why did the Federal Reserve have to loan the European Central Bank $1.4 trillion? 800 banks took part in that. Doesn't sound very encouraging.
Well, it can't be a good sign. And of course, there are really very few good signs, unfortunately, when we're talking about the international economic system at the moment. And let's go to one of the emails that I got this week as a question from one of the subscribers to both Corbett Report and the International Forecaster. He writes, "Hi, James, if you get the chance, could you please ask Bob to go into how the SWIFT system is being used against Iran? The BRIC countries are setting up alternative trade arrangements, and as Bob has pointed out in the newsletter, this seems to be a colossal error on the part of the ones pushing confrontation with Iran. Will this quicken the decline of the U.S. dollar as world reserve currency?"
Well, I don't think it'll help them any. I think it's a colossal blunder. I mean, anybody can start up another SWIFT code. And if it's just the BRIC nations, well, that's fine. And, you know, that eats away at the reserve currency status of the dollar. I mean, people want out. They're tired of losing money in a currency where there's no control. They do whatever they want to do to keep the economy going or make money. And their justification is, well, if we don't do that, what's going to happen is the whole system will collapse. It's just like Paulson. He said, look, you either give us the money or we collapse the system. My answer was, collapse the system. Because then you go to jail, you lose everything. So I think that's the best way to go. And, of course, Congress, on cue, just did exactly what they, you know, they were asking for. And they didn't need the money. They leveraged it 100 times, went off and made piles of money.
That's precisely what happened, and yet, exactly as you indicate, it was really almost threats of martial law that they were pretty much putting out there on the table, according to some of the congressmen who were in these backdoor meetings that were happening before the bailout votes. And they were basically saying, yeah, it'll be, you know, troops on the streets, it'll be absolute bedlam if you don't give us what we want. And given that they have that switch and they can convince whatever congressman might be on the fence, although it seems that the vast majority of them are already well over that fence and on the side of tyranny, but given that they have that up their sleeve as the ace, basically saying, if you don't give us what we want, the entire economy will crash. And of course, we saw the big dip in the markets the day that the bailout vote didn't go ahead the first time. So given that they have that power, I mean, really, what is the alternative to that? What can be used to as a defense against that type of total control over the economy, which we know that they have, and we know they're in there with the Presidential Working Group on Financial Matters every day, making the markets do what they want? I mean, that's an incredible power for an enemy and someone who wants to do bad things in the economy to have.
Or people who want to do the economy what they want in order to make it come out the other side the way they want it. And what they're shooting for here is world government. And if they are able to destroy the infrastructure in the United States, they can go right ahead and do what they want, because people will say, well, we don't have a job. We lost our home and our vehicles. I couldn't even get to a job if I wanted one, which I do. And so the government says, hey, we'll take care of here's the food stamps, extended unemployment. And for those of you who are living in dire situations, like in the back seat of your 1965 Monster, we got a better place for you to go. And it's called an internment camp. And we'll feed you and indoctrinate you. They're not going to tell them that, but that's what they're going to do. And that's the way they're going to start it out. And over the next few years, you'll have lots of people in those camps. And eventually, the economy will be pulled to pieces, like Europe and England. And people will be told, look, we'll change the rules, we'll get you jobs, but you got to have world government. And that's the way they're going to do it. Pretty simple. And the reason why is they're not going to call it world government. They're going to call it something else. And the people say, well, gee, we don't have anything else. We don't have a job. I mean, we got to do it. And so that's the way we're headed. And that's the way it was planned.
Well, you're exactly right on that. And part of the point of that you just pointed out there is the fact that, of course, they're not going to call it world government, and they'll never call a tyranny, and they'll never call dictatorship dictatorship. They'll always mince their words and put out some kind of new term, but it'll always be the same thing in different clothing. And currently, they seem to favor global governance, as if that's somehow different than world government. But I'm sure once people start picking up on that, they'll just change it to another term. So it's a constantly moving target, but it's still the same target.
What Americans have allowed is, whether they realize it or not, is for a criminal syndicate emanating from Wall Street banking and transnational corporations to take over the country. It's called corporatist fascism. And as we go along, more people will discover it, and they'll start calling it that. Although many won't, that can't identify it, because they're afraid that they might get put in jail or they might get killed. But that's the way the whole thing is headed. And what will stop it? Chaos in the United States. It's certainly not going to be through Congress. And you know, they'll use an incident and blow it up, and and try to control people through that incident or start trouble through that incident. And as it evolves, the whole problem can go either way, in favor of the government or favor of the people. And the government is the enemy of the people. Most people don't know that yet, but they'll find out. And so I think that America is headed towards revolution. And hopefully the military will take over and bring that to an end, because we can't depend upon Congress, who are controlled by the evildoers behind the scenes who want to bring this about.
Well, when you say that you hope the military takes over, I hope you certainly don't mean the type of martial law directed from the same Washington critters. I assume you're talking about more of a grassroots effort by people who are still loyal to their oaths.
Yes, usually colonels and below. And they all know what's going on. I've been talking to them on radio for almost 8 years, all over the world. And we've given them the truth. And they're not going to take illegal orders. And they're not going to round up Americans or shoot them. They're just not going to do it.
Well, let's turn our attention internationally then, because, of course, this is a global governance system that they're putting into place, and one that will affect different countries in different ways. So we have one email from a listener in the UK who writes, I wonder whether you could ask Bob to talk a little bit about the UK and its finances, in particular the future of the housing market and the government's decision to underwrite many mortgages. Bob also mentioned the possibility of gold confiscation in the UK in the latest international forecaster. Could he elaborate?
As far as gold confiscation, I think it's framed in a setting where government can do anything if it's in power. And if they decide they want to round up all the children under 6 years old, they'll do it. Or whatever. Well, people don't understand that a government in many states has usurped what they're supposed to be doing. As far as condition of what's going on in England, they're broke. So just a few weeks ago, they told us that. And they just keep on printing money, hoping that it'll all work out. And their repression of the people continues in massive ways. I mean, they got cameras in every corner. You can't even breathe in a stifled United Kingdom. I certainly would not want to live there. Although that can happen to any country, but it looks like they are first in the lineup. And as far as the housing, the lower end has got serious problems. And the government subsidizing it. And you saw what happened in America. It was a disaster. So, that's the end of that. And the upper end, it's held up because foreigners are coming in with lots of money and buying in safe London into a market at the upper end that has very few houses for sale. So that's why that's held up. But I see lots more trouble. They're doing the same thing to England as they are Europe and the United States.
Well, let's branch out from that. I mean, let's look at the larger situation in Europe and how the UK plays into that. Obviously not a member of the Eurozone per se, but still obviously tied in with the banking infrastructure there. So what really, is the outlook in terms of the UK's place in the Euro and the Eurozone as the Eurozone begins to collapse?
Well, I think they'd like to bring them all down simultaneously, but I think Europe's going first. I mean, I'm reading this morning, they're talking about how a funding mechanism for the countries in trouble, EFSF, is going to be merged with ESM. Mary, is there a comment in any of the information I read in 5 different languages that the German federal court has said the ESM is illegal for Germans to participate in? Now, I wonder why. Of course, we know why. They don't want people to know. And that means that Germany is going to go against the federal court, which has already ruled on it. And the next step, which will happen, is they'll make a deal, form the ESM illegally, because they don't care. Just like the president with his executive orders in the United States. He does what he wants to do. Well, that's what Europe plans on doing, to bring about the New World Order. One world government. They don't care what the rules are. They just change them as they go along.
That's the game plan, isn't it? Unfortunately so. All right, well, let's, as we're going around the world tonight, in keeping with the name, the International Forecaster, let's look at a different area and a different staged event that's taking place right now. And we look at the nuclear conference that's happening in South Korea right now, supposedly concentrating on the threat of nuclear terrorism, but being distracted by North Korea and its latest round of flexing whatever muscles it might have in whatever attempt to maintain its crazy person in Asia status. It is apparently now Japan is readying its interceptor missiles ahead of the proposed North Korean rocket launch. And we have this from CTV News. It says Japan's defense minister on Tuesday ordered interceptor missile units to prepare for North Korea's rocket launch next month. The Unha 3 rocket is expected to fly over western Japan after it is launched from a pad on North Korea's west coast between April 14th to 16th. And that has raised concerns that a failed launch or a failing stage of the rocket could endanger Japanese lives or property, which is particularly interesting because I'm right here in western Japan. So I guess if it falls out of the sky on my head, you'll be the first to know about it. But I once again, the North Korean situation, just a quite a bizarre situation. What do you think is really going to come out of this? And do you think there's really anything to this? Or is this just more sort of bargaining for bargaining room at the bargaining table in order to do more bargaining, as all that's really all that ever seems to happen in these six-party talks about North Korean disarmament?
Well, you could very well be right. I've always thought from the very beginning that North Korea was being used by the United States government as a leader in causing problems so that the United States could do what they wanted to do along with others to address what they had to do in opposition to that. And so if you follow that line, I mean, anything goes. But, you know, I continue to see over the years large amounts of food and other things which are virtually given to North Korea, ostensibly so they won't do these bad things, shooting rockets over western Japan and things like that. And I think that the whole thing is a game, and that we're being played for suckers on it.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, that's a good point, because it seems that every political player at the table has its own reasons for maintaining that status quo and that balance of power. Obviously, America gets to keep all of its troops in Japan and in South Korea because there's the ever-present craziness of North Korea, or the Taiwan situation, a similar thing. China gets to arm and be prepared at any moment, and the U.S. also gets to have a reason for having its foot in the door here in East Asia. And it seems like all of these different balancing pieces are just there for the pretense of having the troops here and having all of these bases and everything that, of course, the people of Japan hate. The people of South Korea don't want these bases and these army units positioned in their countries, but there's just nothing they can do because North Korea is crazy. So I think you're right. It does benefit every political player, but of course the people of each country really doesn't like the status quo. So it seems to suggest, exactly as you're indicating, that it will just keep going on and on and on.
And I think, what do they call it in counterintelligence? The North Koreans are a beard. They're a phony baloney group of people that are being used and they're getting paid for it.
Or at least the people in charge of North Korea are getting paid for it.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly right. And unfortunately, of course, the actual people of North Korea get to starve to death because that's just the way the status quo works in that situation. All right, looking at anything else that's happening around the world this week, we just had in Canada, for the Canadians out there in the audience, there was a newly elected leader of the NDP, the New Democrat Party, which is the far left of the far left of the Canadian political spectrum. But again, I'm not sure what difference that's really going to make in the Harper government, which is now a majority government after having been a minority government for so long. Where do you see Canada's place in what's shaping up here? And especially as we start to look at Canada reaching out to places like China and Japan to strengthen trade relations in the wake of the failure of the Keystone Pipeline.
I think Canada does what it's told to do and has for many, many years. And you saw Harper get elected and then assume all the positions that were being assumed in Washington. And so he was probably helped in his election in a number of ways by politics in the U.S. And so I always look at the Canadian government as a more socialized form of what you see in the United States. And they have a limited amount of people, only about one quarter of what they've got in Mexico, and the vast land. And so I think they follow the lead of the U.S. to a great extent. And so eventually what you see happen in the United States will probably happen in Canada as well.
I couldn't agree with that more. And in fact, listeners, longtime listeners of the Corbett Report might remember that I interviewed one of Stephen Harper's fishing buddies a long, long time ago. He's a member of the Bohemian Club and likes to attend the Grove every year. So yes, absolutely. I think there is just that continuation of the American political nexus in Canada as well. And we've seen people like, I believe it was Paul Martin went to Bilderberg, and others like that end up going to those types of conferences and are just part of the same global circuit, which really goes to prove the point that it is increasingly global governance. Well, Bob, I've been monopolizing your time, showering you with questions tonight, but anything else on your radar or anything else that might be coming up in the next edition of The Forecaster that you'd like to touch on?
Well, Friday is going to be a big day because they're going to have a meeting in Europe and supposedly change things. It'd be interesting to see if compromises are made. But even in the case of Germany, it's a compromise they don't have the authority to make. And I think they're waltzing through this thing here, hoping that nobody notices that they've been a failure. The euro is, in its current form, is not manageable. They're going to have to come up with about $6 trillion to save all those countries, and they don't have that kind of money. I mean, there's people in Germany and Holland and Finland want to subsidize these people for the next 20 or 30 or 40 years? I don't think so. So it's doomed, and it should be. The Eurozone was a bad idea. The European Union is worse. Sure, it kept Germany from conquering the world again. But on the other hand, look what's had to have been given up in that process. I mean, you know, the Germans have paid $300 billion a year in subsidies for the last 8 years. I mean, that gets old after a while. And a commensurate amount from the other two countries. And others have contributed as well, but not in those percentages. So, big meeting. I think they'll say that they're going to, and I think it's in August, merge EFSF into ESM, which are the funding mechanisms. And they'll rediscover probably in July that the German parliament will have to go forward and change the constitution if they want to do that. And there's only a year left before the election comes up. I don't think the CDU or the sister party in Bavaria want to do that. And so that's all up in the air. Greece doesn't have enough money, even with the bailout money. And now there's a new plan was just drawn up yesterday. They want even more austerity than that's for already. They're crazy.
They are indeed crazy. Well, as you say, I mean, it's a developing situation, so we can only imagine how it's going to play out, but I think we can make pretty educated guesses based on what we've seen so far. But of course, for people who want to follow what's going on, the best way to do that is, of course, none other than the International Forecaster itself. So let's tell people a little bit about that and how they can get their hands on a copy.
Well, the forecast is about business, finance, economic, social, and political area throughout the world. And it's published on Wednesdays and Saturdays by email. Usually runs 35 or 40 pages. We have a hard copy for those who are not on the internet. That goes out twice a month. And everything you need to know each week is in that publication. If you'd like to get a free introductory copy, you can go to theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, forecaster.com. You can also go to intforecaster.com, intforecaster.com. For those of you who would like to ask a question, we answer everyone, or to get a copy of the publication, or to get a copy of our latest report on gold and silver shares, you can email us. And that address is Bob, B-O-B, at intforecaster.com. Bob at intforecaster.com. And those of you who would like to call toll-free, that number is 877-479-8178. That's 877-479-8178. And for those of you who would like to become subscribers, you can get free copies there. But they have an offer there of a free one-year subscription to the Forecaster. And I think the offer that they're making is terrific. So if you want to become a subscriber, that's the way to do it.
It certainly is, and I certainly hope people will take advantage of it, as apparently at least a couple of the correspondents into CorbettReport.com did this week. And of course, just like those emails I read tonight, if you have questions for Bob Chapman, you can email them my way via contact on CorbettReport.com, and you can send in your questions, and I'll get Bob to respond to them on air. So of course, that's another way to get in touch and to stay in touch with the International Forecaster. But I hope you will also subscribe and get the twice-a-week report. Once again, just a volume of material. So, Bob Chapman, always a pleasure to have you online joining us from your secret undisclosed location, underground bunker fortress somewhere in the world. And it's great to have you here, and we're looking forward to it again next week.
Well, thank you very much, and I'll be here.